Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of November, Anno Domini 2016. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. You probably know a trick or two to help strengthen your passwords by now. You might work in a number or two, or maybe even toss in a little punctuation to make it harder for the bad guys to figure out. Perhaps you sneak in the name of a site or the first letter of its name to change things up. Whatever you're doing, it's probably not enough. Four researchers at Peking University recently published the results of a study entitled Targeted Online Password Guessing: An Underestimated Threat. In it, they describe how they were able to successfully crack some passwords in fewer than 100 guesses. Even if someone was typing those guesses in manually, that's a ridiculously small amount of effort. Their algorithm, called TARGuess, T-A-R, Targeted Online, I don't know what the R stands for, apparently, or Targeted, I say it's short for TARGuess, achieved success rates of up to 73% in some test scenarios. That's 73% of users' passwords in at the most 100 guesses. What is it that makes TARGuess so good at figuring out passwords? It's all about getting to know the target before launching the attack. TARGuess bases its guesses on bits of personally identifiable information, known as PII, that are presented to it. How easy is it for someone who wants to hack into your account to get their hands on PII? Easier than you think, probably. Much of it you've left on the web voluntarily on sites like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Other bits may have been spilled in any one of the dozens of massive breaches that has happened in the not-too-distant past. That Yahoo breach that spilled details on 500 million users, for example. Or maybe you're one of the 21 million government employees and contractors whose personal information was stolen when the Office of Personnel Management was hacked. All that information is out there, and you can be certain the cyber criminals are actively working to exploit it. Say you did your undergraduate work at Syracuse, and you listed that on your LinkedIn profile. TARGuess might surmise that the word orange would be a good place to start. Maybe you graduated in 2001. TARGuess could try tacking 01 on the end of other words to break into your account. The more the algorithm knows, the more refined its guesses. Reusing passwords on different websites is a very bad idea. Hopefully you already knew that, but maybe you didn't know that partial reuse isn't good either. TARGuess could spot your email address in one dump next to a password like secret123yahoo and decide that secret123paypal against your PayPal account would be a good place to start. Yes, substituting numbers for letters the way the TV show hackers do is a thing. It's not a particularly good way to create a strong password, though. The TARGuess code has more than a dozen transformation rules, so swapping your A's for @ signs or ampersands or your T's for sevens or your S's for fives and any of that leet nonsense isn't really going to trip it up. Not convinced? Check out Telepath Words, a tool created by Microsoft researchers that can predict the next character in a password as you type it. Simple substitutions like that rarely throw it off. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is 100 guesses is enough to crack your password. Your choices are, I'll change mine right now. I think I'm pretty secure. I'll change the duplicates. I can't be bothered keeping myself safe, and I'll post my passwords in the comments. So far, we have 28 voters, and I think I'm pretty secure is the lie we tell ourselves most, apparently, followed by I'll post my passwords in the comments. I knew that was going to get a lot of votes. But I know you'll have more to say about this, particularly now that you've actually heard the news. And you can go into our forums. If you scroll down on the right, just underneath the search bar, you'll see fascinating stuff. And if you click the first link there, that's the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first poll discussion is 12 November 16. 100 guesses is enough to crack your password. So far, we've got five people who have responded, and we hope you will join them. And we also hope, of course, that you will join us. And you can give us a call very easily, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I guess we shouldn't be so astounded that they can guess passwords that easily.
Yeah, really.
Well, you start typing a search phrase into Google, and you type 3 or 4 characters, it already knows the entire sentence you're going to search for.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And same thing when you're doing a password. In fact, I'm playing with that Telepathwords website that I posted on our page, too. As soon as I type in M, it figures, hey, monkey.
Yep. Yep.
Or the other H was Halloween, because we just
had Halloween. That's
Halloween,
exactly, yep. Right.
And so, you know, the holiday that you're near, it's really, really interesting to see what it comes up with.
Yep. It's
a type of P, it assumes porn.
Is that
just me? Try it on your machine.
Well, with you, yes. No, it knows Steve too well.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got long history, Steve.
You got a history. The reality is that these things are, passwords are not easy anymore. They used to be pretty easy because there were no tools. And then as long as you use certain simple algorithms like leet typing, you know, the substituting numbers for letters, things like that, you were okay. And then adding in punctuation, you were okay. Mm-hmm. Now it's because computers are so fast, not smart, just fast. They can figure out an amazing amount of stuff about us. And so...
And make billions of guesses per second.
Right. Yeah. And right. And so not only can they, now they can gather information about us. So if you're a big fan of a sports team and you post that constantly on Facebook, this TarGuess program can gather that information and try the team name and try, you know, if they won the Super Bowl, maybe champions, blah, 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 whatever year it was, that sort of fair. And get a hit within 100 guesses. So using things that are, in fact, not terribly related to you are really the way to go at this point. And so if you've been, and particularly reusing passwords, like it said, if your password for Yahoo is secret123 and your password for PayPal is secret456, or a secret123Y and secret123P, that is so easily guessable by the time it gets to the second one that you're kind of done across all your media.
Well, that's like what we said also when you're answering, you know, secret questions. It might ask you your favorite color, and you put in Ford.
That's exactly right.
Something totally obscure. I mean, yeah, they're going to sit there and they can run through the colors, you know, very easily. You know, or what city you were born in, especially if they check you in Facebook.
Right.
You could, you know, if they ask you what city you were born in, put in some city that you'd like to visit that's favorite to you, Hawaii.
The trick is you got to remember how you lied.
Well, that's again, if you
write that down, that's okay.
Yeah, write that down.
Here's the thing, the other thing that we tend to forget. There are lots and lots of what are called games or stuff on Facebook that are just ways to get at your private information. You know, so your mafia name is the name of your first dog and your mother's maiden name. Well, guess what? Those are two secret questions that most banks and other places will use. So if they, and you say, oh, my first dog was Fido Smith. There you go. They got you. So you want to remember, not either don't answer those things or lie on either that or your website. For example, and Dave is right. I actually talk about that in the Security Tango on the page about passwords. Under Tango links, there's thing called Good Passwords. And it talks about how you make good passwords.
Yeah.
And how...
Bless you,
excuse
sir.
Me. Apparently, I'm allergic to passwords.
Uh-oh.
One way to make good passwords, and I'll be updating that again to add even more information. But you can make passwords long, and that's the real trick right there, making
obscure.
Them long and unique. Because computers, people say, oh, well, you know, you put that leet stuff in, that sevens for T's and things like that, and it really, you know, makes it hard to guess. Makes it hard for humans to guess, but computers don't care. You don't remember, computers don't speak English. It's all just lines of code to them. And then they match it against a dictionary. And once somebody says, you know what, if you see a seven, pretend it's a T, see what happens. You're done. So you really have to handle these things much differently than you used to.
I use Route 13 for my passwords.
Yeah. Because again, for humans that's difficult, and for computers,
yep.
It's just one more algorithm.
Yep.
Yeah.
And a well-known algorithm at that.
A very well-known algorithm. Years and years and years ago, I wrote a routine actually in fourth, but it's translatable to anything. If you use base 36 as your arithmetic base, then it uses the numbers 0 through 9 and the letters A through Z.
Yeah.
Now, uppercase only, but in those days, uppercase was all you had.
Yeah, you had to pay extra for the lowercase card.
Right, exactly. So I wrote a routine in fourth that took your password as if it were a number in base 36 and then hashed it.
Yeah.
And that held up for many, many, many decades, quite frankly. But even so, today it's not so good. Not so good.
And what we've seen is that because computers have gotten faster and faster, it's more and more easy to crack longer passwords. So we used to say, you know, 3, 4, 5 characters was enough. Now, you really should have 15, 20 characters.
Well, there's a thing called rainbow tables.
Yeah.
And it used to be, and rainbow tables are actually tables of hashes for Microsoft passwords. And they're up to, the last time I looked, of course, it was 17 characters. And it may be even longer now. So really, Steve is absolutely right. A 20-character password may not be long enough.
And we have to start, I've been trying to program myself to stop saying password and use passphrase.
Yeah.
Because that's the biggest problem. Do not make your password a word, because they just feed the dictionary in and that's it.
Yep.
If your password is a word or even a popular quote, because we'll put Bartlett's famous quotes in the password crackers too.
Exactly right.
You're screwed.
And you know, we tell people we'll use a phrase from a poem or use a phrase from a movie, but not the famous ones.
Yeah.
You know, ain't afraid of no ghosts is a very bad password.
What was the one for a while? There is no fate but what we make. That's a really long password.
Yeah.
Except it's a very famous quote from the Terminator movie. And
right,
so
exactly.
Now that's being tested for.
Exactly. If you're going to use a phrase from the original Ghostbusters, use, where does that staircase go? It goes up. Okay. That one is going to be a little harder to guess.
Yeah.
And it's, 42 characters, something along mm-hmm. that line? Easy to remember, maybe not so easy to type. But it includes uppercase and lowercase and punctuation and spaces.
The bottom line is, how important is your security to you?
Right. Many people don't care. And
that's,
good for you. If
that's
you wanna
the bottom
be,
line.
If you want to be caught, that's your business.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully some of the new login methods, like
that's okay,
Steve
you
Gibson
don't...
Squirrel, are going to catch on.
Right.
And they're trying to bypass the need to remember a password and just have your smartphone remember a huge cryptographic key.
Right.
And then you have to keep your smartphone with you all the time. But most people do that these days.
Well, most people do that. And that's the whole idea behind two-factor authentication.
Yep.
You know, like Google uses, you put in your password and then it sends you a code to your smartphone.
The problem is the text messaging system is easily subverted.
Right.
So you want to make sure, on an iPhone, you want to make sure it's an Apple iMessage, which is encrypted at their end, or on Google.
Telegram or any one of those other encrypted services.
Right. Text messaging is easy to bypass.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and whoever's on the phone at the moment. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It is Soundbites and the truly great and truly grateful member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Ed from Ithaca on the line. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Good morning. I have a fairly new laptop. It's a Dell Core i3, and it has half a gig. And Firefox, when I look at the task manager, sometimes takes up 400 megabytes. Right now, it's about 180, and I'm not doing anything. I have four tabs open. I want to know if that's the way it should be.
And this is Firefox?
Firefox.
I would say, no, that's not the way it should be, but yes, that's the way it is.
Oh.
Especially when you have multiple tabs open. Firefox and Chrome and Safari, all the browsers tend to get kind of memory hungry.
Uh-huh.
They've all instituted sandboxing of tabs. So every tab operates in its own process so that an exploit in one website can't affect the other ones you might have open. And part of the side effect of that is each tab runs a little bit more memory.
Mm.
Every new version of each browser tends to say that they're working on that memory leak and how much memory they're using. But that sort of is an issue, partly because RAM is so inexpensive. Throw 8 gigs of RAM in the computer, 16 gigs of RAM in the computer. Who cares if Firefox is taking up a gig?
Okay, so there are a couple of things that you can do maybe to help.
Uh-huh.
If you have a theme on Firefox, that can use up a lot of memory, particularly depending on which theme you're using.
I'm not sure what a theme is.
Okay, then you're probably not using one. It's essentially a skin that you wrap Firefox in so it looks different.
Oh, no.
Safari has them. I don't know if Safari has them. I know Chrome has them and Firefox has them. And
like if you put a picture behind your web search.
Yeah, same idea.
Yeah.
Right, that's a theme. Also, extensions that you're running can cause trouble. You know, some of them do some very nice things, but they take up a lot of room, a lot of memory.
And if you tried an extension and then don't use it anymore, but didn't uninstall it, it's still in there using memory.
Right. And stopping it from running is not the same as uninstalling it.
Okay, the only extension I have is NoScript.
NoScript is good because that actually lets you disable scripts that would actually add to the amount of memory you're using. Flash Block would help too if you're still using Flash.
And Flash is a memory hog.
Any plugins that you've added can do it. Flash hardware acceleration can help. So if you have that ability, if you look in the setup, one of the checkboxes will be enable hardware acceleration, and that can help. Using fewer tabs. It's really pretty much all there is to that. If you've only got half a gig of RAM in that machine,
So 512 megs of RAM in the machine, or 512 megs that Firefox was using?
Oh no, let me think. I've got 4 gig of RAM.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and a 500 gig memory.
No, you've got a 500 gig drive.
Right.
You have 4 gigs of memory. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Same units.
That's part of the issue.
Backwards.
Okay. So adding more RAM to that machine will certainly help.
Uh-huh.
If you try using something like Firefox, Chrome, the newer versions of Chrome are trying at least to use less memory. But the reality is, as I've been saying for decades, the price of poker keeps going up. And with all the cool things that you can do on websites and all the nifty features that they provide in browsers nowadays, they're just taking up more and more RAM.
Yeah, and that's why we say that 4 gigs is the bare minimum on a machine, and you really should get at least 8.
Right. I have only 2 gigs in this machine. But again, it's a Chromebook, so none of that memory is being taken up by the operating system. right? So all 2 gigs is being dedicated to the browser, whereas on your machine, quite a bit of your memory is being taken up by the operating system itself and any other programs you have running simultaneously with your browser.
But they're minimal. I'm just looking at the huge hog is Firefox.
Yes, it would be. Yeah, absolutely. The more stuff you have open, the more that Firefox is going to take up. But there's no magic bullet, and I wish there was.
Okay.
So it's either more RAM or fewer programs or fewer tabs.
Okay.
Sorry, Ed.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Do you have time for another question that's completely different?
I don't think. Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay. I wanted to find out if there's a way of downloading things from YouTube to save them.
There are hundreds of YouTube video downloaders.
Yeah.
The problem is many of them are either crap or malicious.
Yeah. They add a lot of bloatware and spyware. Exactly.
Yeah. Finding the right one, finding a good one is hard.
You're running Windows?
Yes.
Which version of Windows?
10.
Okay.
Major Geeks usually has pretty reliable stuff.
But the problem is they're wrapping all their software in adware.
Some of it.
Yeah.
If you get it right from their website. Sometimes if you get follow a link and go to other websites on Major Geeks, it will have other
or
around
said,
it.
You said you're using Firefox?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you go to the Firefox add-on store, you'll probably find a direct download for YouTube downloaders.
Okay.
Yeah,
they're out there, but you just got to be careful. And when you're installing, pay close attention to what you're agreeing to. A lot of them will sit there and say, and we're going to add all this other stuff on, right? And you can say either accept or deny, and if you, or decline. And if you decline that, some of this other bloatware won't get installed. But too many folks just sit there and say, oh, they started, they just go next, 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 next. And all this other bloatware has been added in, and they didn't take the time to decline it because they're thinking, well, no, I want it on there. I don't want to decline, but they're accepting bloatware.
Right. And if you go into Firefox add-ons, you will find one that's actually called YouTube Video and Audio Downloader.
Okay.
And it will save videos as FLVs or MP4s or WebMs or 3GPs or whatever video format of choice you like. Now, there's also a JavaScript library that extracts the original audio file. So if you just wanted the audio, you could get that. The problem with this, of course, is that it is also going to take up space in your memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, it's trade-offs.
I used to use one called KeepVid. It was written in Java. And then Java started having all its problems, and I basically have stopped downloading YouTube videos and just... If I want to watch it again, I just stream it again.
Yeah, I use Linux, so there's a program called YouTube-DL.
Yeah.
I just feed it the URL, and I get it. So, there's lots of stuff available as add-ons to your browser, as standalone programs, but be careful what you get and make sure you're only getting what you want. One thing you might want to think about is something like the YouTube Video and Audio Downloader has 703,000 users and 361 reviews, 4 stars. Maybe you should read those before you do anything else.
Uh-huh.
At least some of them. Maybe not all 360 of them, but a few of them anyway.
Okay, great.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
No, thank you. Have fun.
Thanks. Bye.
Yep. There's a tip. There's a pro tip for you. Before you download anything, if there are user reviews, read them. If there are too many user reviews that you don't want to sit there and read 361 reviews, you can many places you can sort them. And so read the top 5 and the bottom 5. Right? So you get some idea of what issues people are having before you decide I have to have this. And don't forget, when you download an add-on, it's being downloaded to what is essentially a completely unique environment. No two computers are the same. And so other people's problems may not be your problems. Other people's joy may not be your joy. So using it, everything's a crapshoot, but give it a shot and see what you think.
And speaking of Firefox, did you read the story a couple weeks ago about Firefox eating your SSD?
Oh, yeah.
There's a setting in Firefox and Chrome. I'm not quite sure about Safari, where it saves your session state. So yep. All the tabs you have open, the windows you're using. So if the browser crashes, it will, next time you launch it, it will just reopen all those tabs again.
Right.
Which is convenient. The problem is that it saves that session state every 5 seconds. And it writes that data to disk without looking to see if anything has changed in the last 5 seconds. So for our previous caller, Firefox is using 500 megs of memory. It's writing 500 megs every 5 seconds.
Right.
So that can slow your system down
and
a little
bit. And, of
course,
what kills SSDs is writes.
Right. So writing data to an SSD damages the SSD a little bit. And then over time, that's why SSDs can fail. So when you have so many writes so fast, you might have that some of the testing they showed, they were doing 50, 60 gigabytes a day. An hour, 50 gigabytes an hour.
Yep.
You just take years off the life of your SSD. So I posted an article on how to change the session store interval time. So you can increase it from 5 seconds to something longer. Because it is a nice... it is a nice option to have that session restore. If the browser crashes, it brings everything back again. But you don't necessarily need it to write that often. So it's a big issue on SSDs because of the write life issues on an SSD. But even on an HD, you don't necessarily want to be exercising your hard drive that much that long.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tim. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two questions, one about Chromebook and one about passwords. First, the Chromebook, want to be able to print using like a USB out on a Chromebook. I don't want to have to go through the web and print it through that way. Is there a way of doing that?
I have not done it, wow.
Because I have some neighbors that have printers and they have a Wi-Fi network, but I can't be configuring up a Wi-Fi printer for them because if it goes down, they're done, right? But if they can plug in the USB port to a Chromebook and print like they did with their Windows machine, then all is good, right?
Right.
The trick is loading drivers for Chrome.
Yeah.
Can that be done?
Yeah, generally. Now, it depends on the printer.
Yeah, okay. You have to get the Chromebook app.
Right. Well, no. Well, it depends. A lot of USB type printers are actually built in, particularly HP and things like that. So theoretically, depending on the printer, you can just plug in a USB cable, select that local printer, and hit print.
Oh, so it might be simple just plugging the USB into the Chromebook, and that might work.
And the easiest way to test that is to do it.
Okay, that's great.
You lost 8 seconds if it didn't work.
Yeah, that's great. I will certainly try. And Neverware, I presume, would do the same thing on an iMac if you install it on an iMac?
Well, Neverware is a little different because it will require drivers, but many of them come with it.
Oh, so Neverware on an old iMac might work with a printer plugged in right away. Is that true?
Yes. Again, same thing. Plug it in and see what happens.
Okay, so next question is about passwords. Now, I heard you guys talking about that, and, computers can do thousands of passwords per minute type thing. Why is it that email and other things don't require you to wait a minute after a bad password's entered? Because then it would take 500 minutes when an incorrect password is entered. Wouldn't it be great security?
It's terrible security to do it the way they're doing it. Absolutely. It's not secure at all. And the issue there is weighing between you typed your password wrong and you want your email right now. You typed your password wrong and I'm making you wait a minute. Well, you know what? I'm going to go use a different email program.
Yeah, but if it was little as 30 seconds or 20 seconds, that would stop the thousands of hacker attempts per minute, right?
Well, the problem is most of those attempts are not done online in real time. Someone accesses a password database. 500 million Yahoo passwords were lost, not by typing them on yahoo.com, but someone got a hold of that physical database from a Yahoo server. Now they can sit at their leisure and run a program against it and try as many combinations as they want.
But my thought was that, you know, someone brute force attacking would have to try password, it fails, another password, if they had to wait even 30 seconds between each brute force attack.
They don't try brute force password hacking online.
They very rarely do that.
They get a copy of the database that the passwords are stored in and attack the database.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right, well, thanks. You guys solved my problem with the printer and answered my professor question. Thanks so much for being there.
Yep.
Thank you. Have fun.
There are some systems that do that. As I mentioned earlier, the Squirrel Secure Quick Reliable Login, it does have a feature where it takes... I forget how many it takes, a couple of minutes to generate the 256-bit AES key with the 4096-bit, you know, encryption length and whatnot, intentionally to slow down online hackers.
Nice.
So they designed that into the spec to begin with. But the problem is email was never designed to be secure, and the whole internet was never designed to be secure in the early days, and so trying to add security on afterwards is virtually impossible because the bad guys will just switch back to the unsecure version because that's all backward compatible in there.
Right, right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites and the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And Mark from Greece is joining us on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Going back to the gentleman about the... downloading videos from YouTube.
Yeah.
There are quite a bit that you can use from the add-ons, but I find that YouTube latches onto them pretty quick and finds a way to block them.
Uh-huh.
One of them's Net Video Hunter. Works great until, you know, somebody blocks a video. Not all videos are blocked, but a lot of them are.
Right.
Forget about getting anything from Vivo.
Right.
It won't work. Another one is Download Helper, but again... they found ways to block it, and now that company has watermarked their download, so they want you to pay for the version of that plugin.
Right. Some of them, absolutely some of them do that. What's interesting are the ones that actually use HTTP.
Right.
And pull it in, and then once they are streaming it, they capture it. That's what YouTube DL does, so it's not catchable.
Right.
It looks like a browser is actually streaming it.
So I found that some of those add-ons, they work until they
don't
catch on to them. But some of them work very, very, very well.
Excellent.
And the author of the video can allow that video to be downloaded as a setting in YouTube. And then right in the YouTube play window, there is a download video button. So that's what YouTube has said. That if you want to allow your video to be downloaded, then turn this on, and you can.
Right, so people can just download it themselves without having a separate program that does that.
Right, and I don't find those very often.
Yeah.
So
it's off by default. You have to manually turn it on when you create a video.
Right, and I find that most people don't do that.
Right, right.
Yeah, so... But there are many, many neat ways. I tried to stay away from any of those downloads from like Major Geeks and all those things because I find they're more hassle to try to install and get around any of their adware and all the junk that they put in there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you could find a direct download, those are usually better. But I stay away from all those sites, especially seeing that they download.com. They've killed it.
Yep.
They've absolutely ruined it.
Yep.
And I'd rather not even bother than have to deal with that stuff.
Yep. I agree. I don't disagree at all. Absolutely.
So, well, thank you.
All right. Yep. Thanks.
And that's one of the reasons there are so many YouTube video downloaders is that YouTube finds them and takes them offline. And so the next guy will pop it back up, and you try to change it so YouTube doesn't find it anymore. Because technically, you're violating someone's copyright. You're copying their file without their permission.
Right.
Which is why YouTube has an option to allow you permission to download it, and that's what they say you should be doing.
Right. Right. And so if they do not allow you to download, that's something else we should mention, which is that if they don't allow you to do it, then it is probably illegal to do it. So if you do it, you have to understand that you've done something illegal. So anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jason, friend of the show, Jason from Altoona, PA. Hiya, Jason. What's up down there?
Oh, nothing much. Actually got pretty good weather today. I missed the very beginning of the conversation about the guy from YouTube.
Yeah.
Did you guys mention YouTube Red at all?
We did not mention YouTube
good
Red.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. Go ahead.
With YouTube Red, if you pay for the subscription, and it gives you a lot of extra benefits to go with it, but one of the nice features is it does allow you to save YouTube videos right through the YouTube app.
Right, right.
And it's only like $5 a month, so it's relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
Right. For those of you who don't know, YouTube Red is a I've just done something fairly stupid to my system. Hold on. YouTube Red is a version of YouTube.
$10 a month.
What?
$10 a month.
Yeah, it's $10 a month, and it's a membership thing. And you see, it's $9.99 a month, $10 a month. We know that. You get YouTube ad-free. You can save videos offline. You can play videos in the background. And then there are the YouTube Red Originals, right? Which are original movies and series that are large-scale productions. And most of them are from the top YouTube creators. You have access to those as well. And $10 a month sounds like a lot, but it depends on how much time you spend in YouTube.
Yep.
And whether how very annoyed you are or are not by ads. And of course, ads are only really on the more popular site. So the stuff that I watch never have ads.
I got a kick the other day. I was watching the new Wonder Woman trailer.
Yeah.
And which is an ad for a movie.
Yeah.
Before I could watch the ad, I had to watch an ad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I've been seeing lately is on a bunch of the maker videos is if they go over 5 to 10 minutes, somewhere in that range, YouTube is automatically breaking them up and putting commercials into the videos.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. Oh, interesting.
That's rather annoying because whatever algorithm they use, it doesn't break it at a location that seems natural. You're just running along, and all of a sudden there's a commercial. It's like, what happened to my video?
Yeah, right. Wow.
But also, if you buy the YouTube Red, I believe that also gets you the Google Play Music Play Pass or whatever it is through Google Play, too, if you're using the Android system.
Yep. YouTube.
And YouTube Music, YouTube Gaming, and YouTube Kids.
Right. So you get a lot of everything. It's only $10 a month, which obviously I won't go there. Can be inexpensive.
And it's part of that whole cord cutting thing where, you know, if your cable TV bill is say $100 a month,
mm-hmm.
You cut that out and you get YouTube Red $10 a month, you get Netflix $10 a month, and then I want HBO, that's $15 a month. You can cut your cable TV bill and then buy stuff a la carte, but you still have to be careful about buying stuff a la carte, and you could end up paying more than your cable bill was.
Yeah, but I wound up going with the Roku and Sling.
Sling has got a great package together for $20.
Another story coming out is Amazon. They're supposedly the first year coming out with something. But yeah, I checked. I've said before, you know, I sat there and made a list of all the channels that were important to me, and that's what you got to do is sit there and actually take the time and research out what channels are, you know, important to you to watch, and then go hunting for the packages there. And there are some selections out there now that are offering quite a few, and the add-ons are very cheap.
Yep. And the one of the annoying things is that so many of these online channels are coming up with original broadcasting. So Netflix has original shows. Hulu has original shows. Amazon has original shows. Suddenly you need to subscribe to all of those channels to get the original shows you want.
Right. Uh-oh.
Oops, sorry.
We seem to have...
We seem to have lost
Jason.
Well, yeah, we were done with YouTube Brad, I guess. We forgot to ask him if he was done.
Right. Sorry. Well, the thing of it is I wound up going from a cable bill of $95 down to now I'm doing $30.
Yeah.
You still have to have an internet service.
Yeah.
But so a lot of people look at their cable bill and it's $200. Well, break that out for phone, TV, and internet and see what you're paying for each thing.
Well, it'd be better if I had Greenlight, but, you know, that's a whole other
Hey.
Well, see, I'm going to have to just come over and start camping in his driveway.
That's right. I can rent you a room. Amelia's not home right now. I will be happy to rent you a room.
I don't know if my dogs would get along with your cats. So.
Well, that is an issue we'll have to solve. But yeah.
But no, as I was telling you before, when I first came in, it's one thing so far I have not regretted one bit. In fact, let's say that they added on the other packages, and like Steven said, you know, more and more of these stations that were under contract now are falling off.
Yep.
So all of a sudden they're getting bundled up with these other services that the big cable companies can't sit there and say, well, no, you can only get it here.
Yep.
Well, they realize
if they've got shows people want to watch, people will pay to watch those shows.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the problem is no one knows much what channel what network the show is on.
Right.
I want to watch NCIS. I don't know what network it is. I can barely remember what number it is.
Right.
My DVR remembers for me.
My DVR remembers for me. That's what's missing, right now from all these services.
Right.
There's nothing that will say, I will record NCIS in case you're not home. Now, you have the ability to go back and watch it on demand or whatever.
Right.
But that's, for many people, that's not the same thing. Yeah. It's a different level of convenience. Mm. I want to be able to sit down and say, what's on my DVR for today?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And that's missing from the cord cutters right now.
The person who
comes out with that feature is going to win. Yep.
The closest thing I found is an app called TV Showtime, where you give it your list of apps. The list of TV shows. No, the shows. You don't have to go by station. Just shows. And it will tell you when a new episode is out. It will tell you the names of all the episodes. Then it's up to you to go to your iTunes or Roku or website and watch it. But so the DVR's got two halves. It's got your programming list and the actual programs. So this is the programming list. Here's the episodes I know I need to watch. You can tap that you've watched it. It's got a commenting and a social system about it. One of the annoying things that it does have is it tracks how much TV you have watched.
Tells you, get a life.
Since I've installed this program, I have watched 3 months, 5 days, and 11 hours.
So you installed it, last week?
Last week, yeah. But yeah, so it tells me the episodes that I need to watch. It tells me what episodes are available to watch. When a new episode comes out, it tells you it's out, and then you can tell it you watched it. In fact, it's got a neat little thing. If you want to read the comments before you've marked that you watched it, it warns you that you might get spoiled by some of these comments.
Nice.
Are you sure you want to read it first? No, I'll mark it and then watch it. So that's the TV show list. And then your internet sources, you know, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, you know, Roku, you know, Apple TV, are your video content sources.
Right.
So until a program can figure out both of those together, TV.com almost does it. You can put in your show and your episode, and it will tell you where you can stream it. But on many shows, the answer is nowhere.
Yeah.
It just doesn't know.
Right.
Or it's not available for streaming. In fact, was it Doctor Who went off of Netflix streaming last month? And
I know
the internet went nuts, especially since the new the Christmas special is coming up,
exactly.
And the new Patrick Troughton episode is on the 19th.
Yep.
Did you hear about that?
Yes,
that was pretty cool. So there's one of the things about Doctor Who. It's been on for 50 years, and in the early days of BBC. They didn't have a lot of money, so they just reused a lot of film.
Because this was a kid's show.
It was a kid's show.
It's a kid's science fiction show. Who cared?
And there was a big fire in the late 70s and destroyed a lot of stuff anyway. So there's a lot of episodes of The Doctor missing, including one of the pivotal regeneration scenes of Patrick Troughton. So BBC and BBC America got together and animated the missing sequences from an audio tape they had.
Well, no, an audio tape they got from a guy who had recorded it as a kid.
Which is how they've found a lot of these missing episodes anyway. Yeah. So who had a VCR in the 70s?
Nobody, but they had reel-to-reel tape players. Yep.
Every now and then, somebody will find a cache of ancient VHS tapes.
They found a bunch of them in the back seat in the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah. They've just been sitting there for 50 years.
Yes.
So now they're going to rebroadcast the missing Patrick Troughton, first Patrick Troughton episode with animated bits where the video was missing.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that should be pretty cool. But the basic idea is that things like this, and you'll put that one online for us as well.
Yeah, you got to take the time, though. You got to be willing to spend the time, sit down and, you know, really go through and, like you said, do your homework to decide what, because like Steve is saying, sometimes, you know,
right,
depending on your viewing habits, it could wind up being more than what you're paying for cable.
And again, it's just like changing the type of computer you own.
Mm-hmm.
All it takes is the time to figure out the new habit.
Yeah.
Once it becomes the new habit, you'll forget it wasn't your habit at some point.
Yeah, mine is.
And it doesn't matter. But a lot of people resist change.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And so, you know, change is automatically bad. And so here we are with people who, you know, it's the inertia. I've always been on cable. It's the only thing that gives me everything I want. I'll stick with cable. Maybe won't. Maybe it isn't.
And that's part of the problem we're in now is there for the last 30 years, there only ever was cable.
Right.
And so that's why you can't watch some shows on the internet, because they have a deal with cable. Because that's all there was to get their show in people's houses.
Right. All right, well, that's that. You've wasted an hour of your life doing this nonsense. But you know what? We're going to do it again right after this set of breaks here. We're going to take a slightly longer break, and then we will be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. But you know what? During that break, you can be very productive. Aside from taking a bio break and getting something to eat or drink, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Stay tuned for a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Sound bites and the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of our show. Microsoft, by the way, has patched 68 vulnerabilities in Windows, Office, Edge, Internet Explorer, and SQL Server, two of which have already been exploited by attackers and three that have been publicly disclosed. The patches are covered in...
And this is since the patch update last month.
Yes.
68 in a month.
Yes, 68 this month. This goes along with Jason from Altoona, PA, just called back and said, yeah, all change is bad. You can blame that on Microsoft. I'm not saying that's true, but that's Jason, our buddy Jason from Altoona,
PA. One of our great listeners.
Yeah. The patches are covered in 14 security bulletins, one dedicated to Adobe Flash Player. Why are you still using Flash, which is upgraded through Windows Update on Windows 10 and 8.1. Six of the bulletins are rated critical and eight are rated important. Administrators should prioritize the Windows patches in the MS-16-135 bulletin because they address a zero-day vulnerability that's already being exploited by a group of attackers known in the security industry as Fancy Bear, APT-28, or Strontium. The vulnerability tracked is CVE-2016-7255, was publicly disclosed by Google last week, only 10 days after notifying Microsoft about it. This caused a bit of friction between the two companies. Google gives vendors only 7 days to fix vulnerabilities or to publish mitigation advice if those flaws are found to be exploited in active attacks. Microsoft disagrees with that policy and feels that Google's decision to make details about this vulnerability public put customers at increased risk. Another Windows security bulletin that should be prioritized is MS-16-132. It's rated critical and fixes multiple remote code execution vulnerabilities, including another day zero-day flaw that, according to Microsoft, is already being exploited by attackers. The vulnerability is located in the Windows font library. And can be exploited through specially crafted fonts embedded into websites or documents. Successful exploitation allows attackers to take full control of the affected systems, Microsoft said in the security bulletin. Three other critical vulnerabilities in Internet Explorer and Edge, covered in MS-16-142 and MS-16-129, have been publicly disclosed before being patched. However, according to Microsoft, they have not been exploited in attacks yet. The Office Security Building, MS-16-133, is rated as important but covers remote code execution vulnerabilities that can be exploited through specially crafted documents. Since Office documents are prevalent in typical corporate environments, I think this bulletin should be treated as critical, even if it is rated as important. Microsoft SQL Server Administrator should prioritize the MS-16-136 bulletin, which covers vulnerabilities in the RDBMS engine. MDS API, SQL Analysis Services, and the SQL Server Agent are also affected. SQL Server vulnerabilities are relatively rare, and although there is no remote code execution, attackers can gain elevated privileges, which could allow them to view, change, or delete data and create new accounts. So how up-to-date are you with your Windows patches? Assuming you actually run Windows, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You know, the more I read about Windows vulnerabilities and all 68 patches in a month, the happier I am I run Linux and a Chromebook.
I'm glad I run a Chromebook.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I do now at home. I live off the Chromebook.
Yep.
I've got a Windows machine, but that's just for other stuff, you know, for my banking and that type of stuff, just to run Quicken on that.
Yep.
Otherwise, everything is done in my Chromebook, and, you know, I just take it upstairs or wherever I want to go, you know, because of the Wi-Fi, and do it there. And I don't have to worry about the stupid viruses and spyware and malware and all that stuff. It's not an issue anymore.
You know, years and years and decades ago, actually, I moved over to Linux and I started using LibreOffice, and I never looked back at Microsoft Office, never once. And now, of course, I use Google Docs, and I don't even look back at except for I still use LibreOffice Base to do some database stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I connect to remote databases and local databases and do that stuff. But other than that, I'm 99% online.
And you know what? You're going to be even happier next year.
Yeah.
Because when all of a sudden people start have to pay yearly for Windows 10, because that's going to be a yearly thing, folks.
So is Office. It's going to be an extra cost on top of paying for Windows.
Yeah.
You'll pay for Office the same way. And I cannot imagine that people are going to put up with as much of that as Microsoft thinks they are.
I just can't. What I'm really excited about is after the first year when the Chromebook will be able to then run apps.
Yep. Oh, I'm buying a new Chromebook this year, probably in January. Once we know specifically which new Chromebooks will run the apps, I want to buy a touchscreen.
Yeah, the list is out there.
Thing.
No. Does it?
Okay, that was weird. At the exact instant I touched the screen, it dimmed.
Ooh.
You know, if you don't touch it for a while, it starts to dim, and then, of course, it'll go into screensaver mode. And it was just weird that I touched it, and it dimmed at that moment.
No, I was just wondering about a Chromebook tablet.
Well, I don't see why there wouldn't be any. Although, the real beauty of a Chromebook is the keyboard. So you'd want to get something that had a keyboard in a case, or Bluetooth keyboard, or whatever.
Out, you know.
Right. I have tried for decades to write on, to type on the screen with an iPad, with a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a touch typist.
Yeah.
And I don't like it.
No, what I'm saying though is the tablet for portability, just to go.
Yeah.
Like if I take, I'll take my.
Or a convertible where the screen flips around. Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. That's a
beautiful thing.
I like taking
thing.
My tablet to work, and then at lunchtime and that, you know, I can sit there and watch other programs, like, you know, because I have the Sling.
Yep.
You know, I can pull that.
Well, you can do that with the with a tablet. With the Chromebook, what you get is the keyboard for typing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real, that's going to be the real difference between the two devices once the Chromebook is able to do Android apps.
And Apple finally almost kind of acknowledged that people might want to be considering about possibly having a touchscreen on their
like
laptop.
Yeah.
So now we have a touch bar.
You have a touch bar, which is
a few buttons. Well, it's reprogrammable buttons. We'll wait to see what the programmers can do
okay.
of it.
Okay, that's
but it's a step.
If I have to choose between the touch bar, which sounds like somewhere I would never send my daughter to, or a touch screen, I will take the touch screen all day, every day.
Even if you only touch it every now and then to, you know, bold or highlighters, you know.
Well, the other thing, though, we've been talking about, and I can see folks doing, is on some, especially once this Windows, you know, starts asking for the yearly subscription, is dumping their Windows 10 and trying to go for the Chrome lookalike.
Yeah,
or
Neverware's cloud ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's
We don't know when they're going to start charging for it, but we're pretty sure that they are.
Right. We don't know when they are, but we know that they are. And what I'm waiting for is that every year we get people calling us and saying, my Windows stopped working. What happened?
Yeah, the big message came up and said, please enter your credit card number.
Right.
Well, hopefully they will, because we're trying to train them not to fall for fake notices that want their credit card number.
Right. And how does Microsoft intend to handle that? It's going to be a bit of a mess. But you know what? We'll get through it as we get through every mess. Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. You're speaking of Chromebook. I have a Chromebook issue.
Ah.
I have more than one. But I just opened it up, just turned it on. I didn't turn it off. I just opened it up.
Yeah.
But I am looking at what appears to me to be spam or something. Basically, I have an open box. It says J3EEZ.exclusive rewards.163.WF.
Yeah, who cares? Yeah. Okay.
It's fake.
It's fake.
Oh, yeah, but how do I get rid of it? How does it go? How did it get on there?
Here's what happens.
You've always said just turn it off and restart it, and it'll wipe things, and I keep getting these pop-ups after doing that.
After actually restarting it, holding the power button down for 7 seconds, and it shuts off, and then you restart it again?
Yes.
And it comes back?
There's a feature on the desktop versions of the browsers where it automatically resumes. We were talking earlier, session restore. It automatically resumes the windows you had open last time. Does the Chromebook have that, and how do you turn it off? So what probably happened is a website you were on had a malicious ad that popped up that window. And then when you restart the browser, it's trying to be nice and going back to all of the websites you had open last time, including that malicious ad.
Yeah, there is a way of turning it off so that it doesn't remember all those.
Yeah. I also had I just clicked the button to make it go away. It says, dear Chrome user, you are today's lucky winner.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's, but I...
And there's no close button, and there's no, you can't alt-tab to another thing. None of that works?
No, I can do, touch other tabs. I can go other places. But this thing just, it launched itself.
How about closing all the tabs that are open and then going up and exiting out of Chrome?
Well, you usually can't close that malicious tab.
What we find that comes from is some add-on you just recently added.
That could be too, an add-in, an add-on, yeah.
Right, so what you need to do is turn off all of your add-ons.
Right.
And reboot and see what happens. And then, start from the earliest ones you added, assuming you can remember, or just do them alphabetically until it comes back, and that's the one.
Okay.
Sadly, you know, depending on where you got it and which one you got, Google tries to weed these things out, but, you know, there are millions a day, so...
One of the things you can also try is to clear your browsing history.
Right.
In the hamburger button settings, advanced, clear
privacy. And your cookies. You know,
because it is a website that it's remembering to reopen for you again.
Right. So also, yeah, try it in this order. First, close out all your add-ons and see if that does it, and then add them back slowly. Also, clear your cookies and also clear your history.
Okay.
And see what happens. I understand that's a kind of a pain in the neck.
Well,
but
I mean, I deal with it with a PC, but I thought
Well, there are some things, you know, if they're going to start putting it in, if they're going to start subverting or lying about add-ons that you're putting in, that there's nothing that can protect you from that except them removing the add-on. But particularly if they wait a month. Right?
Yeah.
You know, if I were writing one of these things, I would say, oh, you just downloaded my add-on. I'll wait a month and then I'll start showing you this stuff because you'll have forgotten what you added when.
Right.
By then. So I would go in and say, turn them all off.
Right.
And see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know if I can live with them all off.
Well, for a minute you can. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, you know, the reality is I got a bucket load of them loaded here that I never use. And I know that, and I, you know, there's, look at them all. I got, you know, broadcast. I almost never use that one. Ah, well, anyway, the basic idea is, yeah, you should, that's the way to fix it, I think.
Is there like a safe boot that doesn't load any of the add-ons?
Not that you can do easily from a Chromebook.
From a Chromebook, yeah. Yeah, I keep seeing boot into factory reset and erase everything, which is kind of your bottom line, if nothing else works.
Right.
It took me so long to get it where I want it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like I said, you don't have you don't have to delete them. You disable them.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I will go in and give that a shot.
Right. Right. All right. Good luck.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. And of course, it's sometimes when you put something in developer mode, you've given it more privileges and permissions.
Privileges, yep.
So that's a problem. So there's a bunch of that stuff that that causes issues back and forth. But
the bad guys keep usurping features that we wanted. It's nice to be able to restore all the windows you had open from last time until one of them's malicious.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next Nope. Looks like we're going to take a quick break. Shows how much I've been paying attention.
Sorry, no, I hate trying to do this. 6 seconds.
It's not a problem. I usually try to keep track of the time, too, and I didn't. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1. I'm going to stop talking now.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Matt from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Matt?
Oh, hi, guys. I'm basically a Mac, an Apple person. I've got a iPod Touch that I use on just with Wi-Fi when I go out. I can check my mail and stuff. But I've been looking for something with a little larger screen. I went to Best Buy and I got an LG. I thought I would use that alone, just with the Wi-Fi. And it's under the Boost Mobile. I never heard of that before, but everything is working fine, except every once in a while I get a screen that pops up and it says hands-free activation. So it wants to activate, and it tries that about five times. And I was just wondering, is there any way to disable that part of it? And have I done the wrong thing going this route?
I don't think you've done the wrong thing if you're happy with what you've got, other than this one little
problem.
Little problem. It's an Android.
It's an Android operating system.
Right, and the Boost Mobile is a cell service which uses the Sprint network connection. So you can pay for cellular access to get on the internet when there's no Wi-Fi. And it sounds like what's happening is you're accidentally hitting a button or feature on it that's turning on the hands-free so that you can make a call or do a voice command in the phone.
If you go into settings, you should find, and I don't own an LG phone, so I can't lead you directly to it, but somewhere in settings is something called mobile data.
Okay.
And that switch is on.
Okay.
And theoretically that should turn it off if you're using it without a cell service. The other thing you can do, of course, is just remove the SIM card.
There is a card in there. Just remove that, huh?
The little tiny SIM card, not the SD card. Look in your manual as to where the SIM card is.
Yeah, there's no manual. I'll go back to Best Buy and have them do it.
Yeah, have them remove the SIM card.
There's probably a download you can get of the manual, too. Now, if you do remove the SIM card, you can't use it on cellular if you ever happen to want to.
Right. I have another phone that I've had for the service for over 20 years. It cost me $20 a month, so I can't see going for $1,200 a year on one of these plans, you know.
No, I get it. And if you bought the phone specifically to just use as essentially a replacement for your iPod Touch, you've done the right thing. You've got exactly what you need. You just have to get rid of this pop-up thing, and you're done.
Great. Could I ask one more, please?
Sure. Quickly.
Since it uses Android OS, do I need anything, any protection from malware or anything?
Everybody who runs an Android phone should download an app called Lookout.
Lookout.
Steve's going to...
Where do you find that?
Steve's going to put up a link to it. It's in the App Store, the Google Play Store.
Okay.
But he's going to put a link to the thing, and so you'll see what it is, and you'll see what the icon looks like, so you make sure you download the right thing from the Play Store.
Oh, that's great. Now, this thing doesn't have a lot of memory. It's got like, 2 gigabytes, and most of it is used up. I just put a couple of apps on it, like the Weather Channel and stuff. So right. I could get more memory from this, is what the salesperson told me.
You may have to. Obviously, Lookout being a protection system is going to use up some memory. So you may find you need more memory at this point.
Okay. Hey, that is super. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Matt. Have fun.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah, I recommend that every single person who owns an Android phone download Lookout. And I think it works with Windows phones, and maybe even, I don't know that it works with...
It's Google and Apple, but I don't see Windows.
Oh, yeah, okay, then Apple. You should have a program like this, and I find Lookout to be excellent.
See, nobody uses Windows phones. That's enough security.
Yeah, exactly. you're right. If you don't have one, it's secure. So yeah, check that out. It's at Lookout, and I don't know what's the... Well, he's
Lookout.com.
Put up a thing. Yeah. For it anyway.
They also have commercial products for businesses. So you want Lookout Personal for home use.
Right. You don't need more than that. And it has a lot of features. It will do backup of your data. It will search for your phone if you've lost it. It won't find it like it's in the couch cushions, but it'll say it's in your house or it's, you know, you left it at work or whatever you did. And so those things are all pretty cool. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Pat. What's up?
Well, Nick, while I was on hold, I'm now installing Lookout on my Android phone.
Well hey. Done, you.
Close the bell. Ding, 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 ding.
And the thing is, I'm wondering, Steve, are you still doing the YouTube videos
yep.
for the show?
Yes.
because I've been trying to sit here. I'm starting about 20 after 12, and I type in sound bites and the date, and nothing shows up.
Oh, it's soundbites.org, I think, is the...
Well, if you go right to the soundbites.org website, down on the bottom, middle right, middle to bottom right, there is a link that takes you right to the live channel.
Okay, because I've always gone through YouTube.
Yeah, you can go to YouTube.
For it to show up.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's, let's see, is it soundbites one word or two words?
Right. Well, soundbites.org, if you go on the right column, under call us, you'll see the two phone numbers in red.
Okay.
And then listen live on Jazz 90.1. That green thing is a link. Or watch us on our very own YouTube channel, and that green thing is a link. And that will take you to soundbites.org, which is the actual name of the YouTube channel.
And yeah, if you search for soundbites, two words, you should find it also. But yeah, the link on our website takes you right
actually,
to the channel.
It sounds like if I type soundbites.org,
nope.
I'd go right there, right?
Soundbites.org in your browser will take you to yeah. our website.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and that will then, like I said, on the right, you'll see a link that says, or watch us on our very own YouTube channel. And if you click on that green link will then open up YouTube.
It says the YouTube yep. channel and video archive. Is that it?
Yep.
Okay.
And if you subscribe to that channel in YouTube, then as soon as we go live, the icon will just automatically pop up on your YouTube screen.
Okay. Well, yeah, I know I subscribe, but usually it must be taking longer to come to Genesee County because I usually get it Monday.
Yeah. But yeah, it is live right now. Seven people are watching, so we know it's up.
Okay. And one last question, Steve. You like this OBS software that you're using for this?
It is working pretty good so far.
Okay, I got your answer.
It's new. He's just started using it.
Using it too.
We've had trouble with Google Hangouts here in the studio.
I actually have an 8-minute video of me staring at the screen and having various changes in my emotions as I'm discovering or not discovering something. And even I would only watch a minute of it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was recording is my point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's all fun. Okay, thank you, guys.
Yep.
Thanks. Yeah, so far I kind of like OBS Studio myself. I like the way it looks. We haven't got... it's supposed to do PIP. It's supposed to do program in program. Picture in picture, rather. I haven't seen that yet. But
so I'm still using CamTwist for that. But hopefully
right.
we'll get everything down to one program.
Right.
Which should make it quicker to launch and start up, because I got to start like five programs to get everything working.
Right.
In the minute we have between shows.
Right, exactly. And if you can only do that with one program,
yeah,
you'll find it a little easier to do. So yeah, we're using OBS Studio. It seems to be doing fine. Steve's done an amazing job, by the way, over the years finding programs that do what we want done,
especially for free.
And for free as well. So, and this is the latest in a long line of things Steve has tried and moved in and out from. One of the problems, of course, is that we are on a school network, and so they've blocked a lot of stuff that would make this much easier to use for various things. But we're very happy to see that at least some of this stuff is definitely being used. And don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or 1-800-790-0415. Just like Brian did from, I'm assuming that's Pavilion?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Brian from Pavilion.
That's a pro-villain.
Pro-villain. Pro-villain. Pro-villain. We're going to talk to the pro-villains. We want to talk to the pro-heroes here. Are you there, Brian?
I didn't hear the hiss. Sorry, my bad.
That's okay. What's up?
Hey, I actually might be able to help with that persistent pop-up with a Chromebook.
Yeah.
On that, my recent travels to Denver, some of the smaller towns have free municipal Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
Through Xfinity. Now, if your caller had been traveling and logged on to Wi-Fi, when you agree to take that freebie, you know, those quotes being free, you're agreeing to allow a special window and an app to be downloaded automatically onto your phone or your computer.
And that's
basically the price you pay to have free Wi-Fi. So maybe if he had been traveling through an airport or something like that, that might be exactly what happened, because that happened to my phone and my Chromebook.
And how'd you get rid of it?
The solution was a factory reset.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
you can't, yes. It's in there. You can't get rid of it.
That's what I must be
in the four-page agreement that they present before you say okay, which, of course, everybody reads.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, we're seeing that more and more. People, you know, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, Tanstaffel, right? So somebody's paying for something somewhere. And the way they do that is by giving you ads. And if those ads are built into the network, every time that thing comes up, Xfinity gets a little ding and another quarter of a penny.
Yeah, well, as good as Android and Chrome are, if you say, well, go ahead, well, then you said go ahead.
That's exactly right.
You know,
that's
so
right.
You still have those landmines to navigate. However, I just thought maybe I'd pitch in with that, and I was able to clear that up. But it doesn't even come up as an app for some reason. It probably does somewhere, and there's probably a way to see it, and it's probably a new thing that the powers that be haven't cracked yet. So.
Yep.
So
all right.
Well, just thanks, guys, and good show.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. So, yeah, that's interesting to find out. Nothing is safe from some of this stuff. The reality is that once you agree to something, you've agreed to it. You can't say you didn't. So,
and unagree is not an option.
Is not an option. No, I want the free Wi-Fi without the ads. Well, that's not an option. So get over yourself.
We're seeing that in some of the pay services. You know, so Hulu just raised their price, and one of the early things with Hulu is that you paid the subscription to get no ads.
Right.
Well, now they raised the price, and you still get some ads.
Right.
They discontinued their free version, so it's not as many ads as it was in the free version, but there's still ads, which people complain about, but that's what we get with cable. You pay for cable, and you still get ads.
Right.
So that's,
we don't seem to mind it in
that,
cable.
That
for
model
for
has been going
reason.
Along for quite a while.
That's exactly right. All right, back to the phones while I choke to death here. Dan from Webster, New York. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, how's it going, guys? Great show. I love listening every week. First, I just want to throw that out to you guys.
Thanks.
Wanted to ask you real quick about a question in regards to the Samsung issues that they've been having with the batteries.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a more of a retro guy myself. I actually have an S4 that's still looming, so to speak, and talking on it right now, which has been doing a good job for me.
Yep.
But I've been noticing that the battery, when I try to plug it in and I try to recharge it, I mean, it's almost 2 years old now at this point. The battery's starting to get where the point where it gets really hot while I'm trying to use it for GPS or while I'm driving. And I'm just a little concerned about, you know, the battery itself. I'm not sure if it's something that you would suggest, maybe that I just suggest upgrade at this point, or is there a way to find another battery for the replacement? The only reason why I'm saying is because I prefer the batteries that can be replaced in the phones. I'm an Android guy. I mean, I'm also an Apple guy, but I prefer the Android system when it comes to the phones. So I was just curious about your opinion.
I own an S5, which sometimes gets a little warm, but very rarely. When it gets to the point where it really is starting to be an issue, I'm just going to change the battery.
Okay.
I'm not as familiar. I'm looking up the S4 even as we speak to see if that has a replaceable battery. Hold on. We got to take a quick break. Can you hold on?
Sure.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Dan from Webster, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites. It's member-supported jazz. 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Dan from Webster, New York on the line. Dan, you still there?
Yes, I am.
One thing you can do is buy a replacement battery. Amazon sells them, Sam's Club or Walmart, whichever one it is, Walmart sells them, Walmart sells them for $10.
Okay.
Amazon has them for $8, and those are real Samsung batteries.
Okay. Assuming that this is all online purchase, like they don't carry them in the store, though, right?
I suspect not. No, I suspect you have to buy them online. But again, okay, if you were to just go to the almighty Google and say Samsung S4 replacement battery, right, you'll get a whole list of this stuff.
And you want to be careful you don't buy anything too cheap, because you never know the build quality. And if you can find one that is actually fulfilled by Amazon, then you have a little more recourse if something is bad with it. Third-party fulfillment, often they have a return policy, but it's just so much easier if it's actually fulfilled by Amazon.
Right, and the battery I was looking at actually is labeled Samsung. I mean, it is a Samsung battery, and that's probably your best bet, even if it costs you a buck more.
Okay. That's all I really wanted to find out for today. Thank you, guys.
You got it, then. All right. See, this is one of the reasons we love the removable, replaceable battery. He hinted again.
Yeah. And because we want our devices to do more and more things and have the battery last longer and longer, companies are really pushing battery technology, trying to squeeze as much juice into these batteries, into a smaller and smaller size. In fact, that was one of the speculations about the Note 7. The battery was getting physically squeezed when it was put into the case, and that's bad.
Yep.
And we just want our batteries to last longer. So hopefully, battery technology, we need a breakthrough in battery technology to get more power out of less space.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Well, a couple observations first, then a couple quick questions. Just took a trip to Arizona, and a couple things somebody just mentioned earlier about when you go to a free Wi-Fi place, a hotspot, Safeway in Prescott, Arizona. I logged in there, and I could not get to Google no matter how hard I tried.
Huh.
Couldn't do it.
They probably needed to reboot their router.
Probably.
Yeah. But, I didn't know what it was, but from hearing what I just heard, it was whatever their software was putting as a roadblock between me and where I wanted to go.
Yeah, a lot of times when you go to companies like that, you go into your Wi-Fi settings and join the network. Yep. Then you have to go to their website to log in to their network.
Yeah.
So the Wi-Fi might not have a password, but their network might. To get you on their internet.
Well, they let me on with no problem, but every time I put Google in the address bar, it would take me to somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But
did it take you to the same place every time?
Yeah, it was the same. And I think it was like a Yahoo search or something.
Yeah, what they're doing is somebody paid them to change
the exclusive browser.
Yep.
And not only did I not have enough time to play around with it, my battery didn't either. The iPads, when you're online,
they eat your
battery.
They do.
Yeah.
Yep.
The other thing, which somebody just mentioned, the Samsung flaming phones, every flight I got on, they made real, real clear that you better not have a Samsung phone with you, either in person or in your luggage, or
wow,
yeah,
any Samsung phone or just the 7?
The burning one,
yeah.
The Note.
I could see some airlines getting a little overzealous and saying no Samsung phones.
Yeah, right.
Just in case.
Well, I wouldn't mind because there was a guy in the seat behind me talking on his phone.
Yeah,
like oh, he had him on speakerphone to boot.
Those people are morons. Yeah. All of you listening, if you're talking to somebody on the speakerphone, stop. You are not that important.
Well, at least you get to hear both sides of the conversation. I get really annoyed when I can only hear one side of someone else's conversation.
The only reason people do that is because they do it on television.
Yeah.
And they think that's the way you're supposed to listen to these things. And the reality is they do it on television so that you, the listener, can hear both sides of the conversation.
Yeah, and
an
airplane is not a good place to commit a felony, so I had to let that one go.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right.
So, yeah, the first easy question, you mentioned a downloader right at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
As far as the server is concerned, it's talking to my browser. That was, what was the name of that managed downloader?
The problem is the one that I was mentioning that does that for me is on Linux.
Oh.
So that's not going to help you at all. I haven't done enough research on the others to know which ones do the same thing. I would have to do some research on that because I download, when I download a video, legally attainable videos that are not unencumbered.
Yeah.
But so those, I download them on my Linux machine using YouTube-DL, which is a program you can.
Yeah, that was an easy question, though, wasn't it?
It was an easy question. Thanks. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, here's one a little harder. I listened to a well-known local radio station that's an iHeartRadio.
Oh, yeah.
And when I listened to it on Firefox, it's fine. I think with Google, I can't remember if I double-checked that. When I listened to it with Slimjet, which is a knockoff from Chrome, it plays like at 1/10 speed, it sounds like.
Yes.
And I've been hunting the internet looking for an answer on that one, and I haven't really found anything. I don't know if you've run across that.
Well, yeah, Slimjet is, so for those of you who don't know, Slimjet is a browser, and it's based on Chrome, and it blocks ads. It has a YouTube video
downloader built in.
It has its own YouTube video downloader, so there you go. So maybe you don't need anything else because Slimjet will do that for you. But it does have some issues with some other things, and one of the things it has issues with is certain types of streams. And that just is what it is.
So it's trying to be a slim and lightweight browser by not including too much cruft.
Right.
But you would think an audio player would be pretty standard.
Well, it's the type of audio player that particular station uses.
Oh, you know, it might be like a Java streamer.
Right,
yeah.
It's a Java app, and it doesn't play well in Slimjet. So, I'm sorry, do it in Firefox, I guess.
Well, for two. Oh, well.
Sorry.
All right, later.
Yep. Bye-bye. It's good to know we're at least consistent.
Yeah.
But we answered his other question. Slimjet has a YouTube downloader, so we're one for two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But Dave. We're not on a roll.
We haven't been on a roll in a very, very long time. If we had stumped the chumps, it would be the entire 2 hours.
No. There was a picture of a sports car on the Slimjet website, and it reminded me of the story I just read. Apparently, the most expensive in-app purchase ever was just done.
Hello?
Guy paid $1 million for an Aston Martin DB5, the James Bond car.
Well worth it.
With Touch ID on his phone. Touched his thumbprint and spent $1 million.
I hope he wanted to.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope, yeah.
Yeah, that's the important part.
Good point, yeah.
Did he in fact want to do that? That's the thing.
Yeah, it was actually 800,000 pounds. It was in England, so
right,
somebody
right,
translated
right.
it.
800,000
yeah.
pounds is $1 million.
So if you want the original,
but you know what? If you want an Aston Martin DB5, does it come with the shield that raises up and the bulletproof shield in the back and the guns in the front?
It doesn't say it was the movie car. It was just the car.
Oh.
Just a DB5, so maybe not a movie. So an actual movie car is probably double that or more.
Yeah, right. Or you buy that one and modify it yourself.
Yeah.
I would suggest not putting real machine guns in the front.
Yeah, that might intimidate.
Or real rocket launchers in the behind the headlights.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah.
Or adding the oil slick.
I can't tell you when I was a kid how many Aston Martin DB5. James Bond car model kits I put together. First you get the car and then you realize they make the car with some of the stuff
features.
That's in it, and then you find another one that has even more of the features in it. Then another movie comes out and it's different. Yeah. Oh my heavens.
I think I remember reading that Aston didn't want to give cars to the studio, and the studio didn't have enough money to actually buy the car, so that they like rented it at a dealer for a weekend.
Yep. And then after the movie came out, then Aston Martin came to them and said, yeah, you guys can have as many as you want for as many movies as you want forever.
Sold out overnight.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that a lot. There's actually been a run on whatever the base model is of the Batmobile. You can't get that model car anymore.
It was a Lincoln.
I forget what it was.
The original, the Adam West Batmobile?
Yeah. Whatever that was, you can get similar model. They made similar cars for a long time. But that particular model, nobody has them anymore because everybody turned them into Batmobiles.
Yeah, that was a George Barris, wasn't it?
Yeah, originally, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That music tells me we're done for another week. And honestly, if you're honest with yourself, you know that's not a moment too soon. I want to thank every single one of you who called in. If you didn't get through, please call earlier next week. We'll be glad to talk to you, but we can't talk to everybody in the last 2 minutes of the show. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright for whatever he's done for the last 2 hours. I want to thank Steve Ray for something fairly similar. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and we will be back next week with a whole nother 2 solid hours of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.